as we stay in this mystery of the heart, we touch levels of understanding that are way deeper than what we imagined.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Insight in Non-Duality, the podcast by the Dutch magazine Insight with in-depth conversations about non-duality. My name is Klaas-Gert Kok, and in this episode, Editor-in-Chief Karin Visser will be talking to Shakti Katharina Maggi about her message, about her drive to give satsang, about personal transformation, healing the ego, the role of the heart, and the possible difference between male and female spiritual teachers. And of course, worries about the current state of affairs in the world. I hope you enjoy the show.
Katharina, Shakti, welcome in Holland on this rainy day.
Thank you.
A pleasure to have you here for the first time, I understood, in Holland.
Yeah.
So, as I'm personally not familiar with your teaching, I like to know, what is your message? What do you like to share with us?
It's an invitation to look in the most sacred part of ourself, that is our spiritual heart, and to find in it our non-dual essence, to discover that behind the conceptualization of the mind and the ideas that we have been built up about ourselves and the world, we are actually one being in many forms, and how to live from this recognition and what does this imply.
Right.
So it's an invitation to find a space within in which the contraction of the suffering can melt and be expressed as joy, as our natural joy of living. That's the core of the message.
That's wonderful. Yeah, thank you. So you're traveling quite a bit, the world, I've seen in your calendar.
Yeah.
So you have a drive to bring this message across. What drives you?
Well, I would say the joy. The joy of sharing what I found in myself. And the same force that drives the spiritual awakening in a person carry on and evolves and is shared with everybody. So it's a never-ending story. It's a never-ending journey. So for me, speaking of this and sharing my being really through the work I do, or I am, is the drive.
Right. Yes. Well, I find it myself as well, you know, as long as there's life, there is a never-ending journey of discovery, actually. Yeah. I'm just curious, what is your last discovery? Can you give a little example?
I would say that I've been pondering a lot in the last weeks and months how important it is that we don't mistake our knowing with our experiencing. And how is important always remain in this mystery of the being, and how, you know, like as we stay in this mystery of the heart, we touch levels of understanding that are way deeper than what we imagined. So, if I would describe you how I feel, is like a sinking in the heart that is bottomless. And more this goes ahead, and more it opens up new level of understanding. And so as this progression goes ahead, I share it with the people I meet.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So when you say experiencing and knowing, is that in any way related to the mental and the...
I would say yes. Sometimes we do experience things that we don't understand, or it takes many times, many years to understand. And sometimes instead we understand things and then it takes many years to experience them. They're not always coinciding. That's what I found, at least. And so in this dropping that I mentioned before, you find new level of realization, and even if it's always the same thing that is realized, is integrated and embodied more and more deeply.
Mm-hmm. So what would you say is the importance between a mental understanding and the embodiment?
I would say that the mental understanding is necessary for the mind, because otherwise there is too much resistance, and it helps to clear the ideas that we build up about ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So the self-inquiry is the way through which we clear the mind.
Right, yeah.
But, you know, I'm sure that you have been experienced this as well. Sometimes we have a glimpse or a satori or suddenly opening to our ultimate reality. And not necessarily we know what it's about. Sometimes we don't know. And then after that, you know, a process of clearing of the contents of the mind from false ideas about ourselves, about the world, starts.
Right, yeah.
So there is an intelligence behind everything. I never saw a person coming to self-realization in the same way of another. And we all are unique cases in terms of the expression. Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, what we see is the same thing. That's the beauty of it.
Yeah, yeah. Also, I think when you talk about understanding, to me at least, in the end, it's just a big mystery.
Yeah.
It's understandable.
Yeah.
And I find that the beauty of it.
Yeah. I mean, true understanding is the realization of our being through our being, and is behind the mind.
Hmm.
Absolutely.
Right.
But there is also like a clarity that happens, you know, like if you expose somebody to a teaching that is clear intellectually and clear, you know, then you use the mind to undo the mind.
Hmm.
After all, it's the mind that got us in trouble, and is the mind that is unweaving the web of illusion until you arrive to a space that is before the mind, and that there is nothing to understand. There is only being.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So would you say it's important to also develop yourself as a person?
Well, it's not a person that wakes up, no?
Yeah.
So we wake up from the illusion to be a person.
Mm.
So it's not that we do a preparation in order to wake up, because there is nobody that is waking up. And also the waking up and the ignorance, they are in the mind, you know, as we say before, it's the mind that leads us to into the illusion, and it's the mind that is dissolving back into the clarity. But you know, I would say that what I notice in myself, if I speak of my experience or the experience of what is happening here, is that what the energy that was building up the ego gets unbuilt, and the same energy is used to express the individual. So a kind of natural expression. So it's not that, maybe this is, I don't know, could be interesting for people listening to this interview. You know, maybe we have the idea that when we wake up, you know, into the oneness of being, we become all the same. It's not like that, you know? And but what I notice in my experience and in experience of people around me is that we become more ourselves because the pretense and the justification of the ego get unbuilt, and then the Shakti, the energy that was expressing like that, is free to access to the natural potential of the body.
Yeah.
So there is not just the feeling free from the fear, from the sense of separation, but there is also this sensation of the body to be used, so to speak, in its best way.
Hmm.
And that's what I mean by being ourselves fully.
Hmm.
And I think this is important to stress, because it's not just a process of transcendence, but also is a process of embodiment, but embodying not the fear, but the love that we recognize to be.
Mm.
So it's a path of love as well.
I see, yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe how we're built as a person as well can finally flourish, you know.
Exactly.
You get this bunch of weird people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating because sometimes people wake up and they are, you know, I mean, it's not that everybody they wake up, you know, is a teacher, because being a teacher is a function, you know, is a function of the body. Certain bodies are good in communicating, and so naturally they become teachers, or at least verbal, you know, because, but then, you know, you can be somebody that does something completely different. I don't know, work with the wood or whatever, you know, whatever really. And that is going to be your expression. I used to have a friend that moved actually here to the Netherlands in the last years of his life. And he woke up and he was a school teacher, and he never, you know, been given satsang or anything like that. But he was oozing this love and clarity and compassion for his students. And when he died quite young at age of 52. There were 2,000 people at his funeral in Italy. You know, it touched the heart of so many people. You know, there is something, you know, that is beamed from a former that is living, from this recognition. And even if you never say to somebody, you know, that's the truth, you know, you're going to share it in your being. Each one of us, you know, can become a portal of transformation. Yeah. In a way, you know, for this message.
I know, Even wordless, you can broadcast it somehow.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there are great, great masters in the world that are way higher than me that don't speak, you know, but their inner balance support this planet.
Yeah.
So
let me ask you a tricky question. Please. You know, when I when I observe a number of spiritual teachers, and I notice that the ones who have sometimes the biggest gatherings are the ones who are driven by an ambition. And sometimes I get to wonder, I think, what has ambition to do with it? But what is your view on that?
I would say that if you want to affirm yourself, you know, or if you are going for power or money or influence
or sex
or sexuality or whatever, you know, on a certain point you would find yourself dry, because the initial force that comes from awakening is an impersonal force that is going to delete the ego, and if it's supported, that's it.
You think after an awakening, even, I mean, there are plenty of examples of teachers who then maybe get lost somewhere, you know, the big three, money, power, sex.
Absolutely.
They get involved with that. So why would that be?
I would say because, you know, there is not like, I mean, if you are an engineer, you know, you're taking a degree and you're an engineer. But if you wake up, there is not like a university that says to you,
no,
you're cooked, you're done, you know. And there was in the past, you know, in the past.
You mean with the traditional?
In the Eastern tradition, you go to Gurukula and your guru will say to you, now you can teach.
Yeah.
You know, and I've been sharing this, encouraged by my teacher at the beginning, but I waited 8 years before actually giving formal satsang, because I was more interested in going deeper in my process. And it's still going on, you know.
Yes.
It's as said, we say before, it's a never-ending journey.
Yeah.
So this is done for love, and it's a service. And I would say that we all are a service. And even, you know, teachers that might have their own flows, and I have mine, everybody has his own shadow. If you walk on the planet, we're going to cast a shadow. And, you know, there are very few souls that are out of the game completely, I think.
Well, even Ramana Maharshi said the ego is still tricking him sometimes.
So we need to remain humble, honest. And so, but say this, you know, even those that, you know, we all stumble you know, every now and then into something. And of course, this kind of position is very tricky and you have to be very watchful and careful.
Yeah.
But I would say that even, you know, who seems to be a false teacher, let's use this expression, it's a service anyway. You know, you can wake up through anybody. Mm. You can wake up through even, I don't know, through anything, because anything is a sacred object that is pointing to the truth of what we are. Mm. And of course, some mirrors are more clear and wider.
Mm.
And but for sure, we meet the right one at the right moment.
Mm. Can be the bus driver.
Yes. So if we don't get stuck with the map, we discover the treasure. And yeah. Because sometimes the fixation on you know, oh, he's this, you know, the right teacher or the right teaching for me, you know, I would follow more what is impacting your heart. You know, do I feel disturbed? What does in me feel disturbed? Am I interested in going ahead? You know, these kind of questions are useful, I think.
Yeah.
And ultimately, you know, this is a path that we do in ourselves completely. A teacher is just the finger pointing to the moon. Is not the truth, you know, is an appearance in your own dream, reflecting your desire to discover what you are. The teacher is not so important. Mm. What is important is our sincerity in keep on digging in ourselves to find the truth of what we are.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you. But there are, I mean, great masters in the world that, you know, that even their name just feels our heart with love, like Ananda Maima that we say before, yeah. You know, or Ramana.
Yeah, yeah, mm. Yeah. So you talk a lot about the heart in your teaching. Mm. Can you say a bit more about it? Why is it so important?
Yeah. Well, because this is not a truth that we know, but something we need to discover to be. Mm. And the only place where a true process, spiritual process of undoing the ego can happen is in the heart. Mm. Of course, not the heart as a physical organ, yeah, mm. And not even the heart as intuitions or emotions, but the heart as, you know, the abode of consciousness. As you know.
You think it's in this region?
It's just resonating physically in this region, and it's not just me saying it, actually also Ramana saying it. But it's not in the body, mm. You know, it resonates in the body in that area, and it's consciousness, it's pure consciousness.
Mm.
So what I invite people to do is to look beyond what they know or what they feel to what is witnessing everything and to discover that this place is the heart. The heart is impersonal, is neutral, is all-including, is truly compassionate. It doesn't differentiate good or bad, or me and you, or anything like that. Is our non-dual essence.
Yeah. It's what you call the heart, maybe what has a variety of names,
of
maybe in other traditions. Yeah.
Okay. You can say it.
Yeah.
Awareness, consciousness, peace, stillness, silence,
God.
Being, God, yeah. Parabrahman.
Yeah.
In is Hidraya in Sanskrit. Hrit is the same.
Mm.
Hidraya or Hrit is I hope I pronounce it correctly, is the heart, spiritual heart.
Yeah. Yeah. I understand,
In the Advaita tradition.
Yeah. So what place does love have in that?
It's the radiance of our being.
Mm.
It's the grace, the energy that creates everything and that appears as everything. It's not a feeling between people.
Mm.
It's this force that appears as everything we see.
I see, yeah, yeah.
And when we get in contact with it, we discover that it's not an external experience that we reach through somebody or something, but it's truly at the core of our being. And it's a big revelation because we see it's so impersonal. And this is shocking for the mind because the mind thinks that love is personal. And so seeing it's not, it's like, what?
Yeah.
And it's behind everything, you know, because it's everything. So, you know, it's for the mind, it's very difficult to accept it, I would say.
Yeah.
But also is...
It always has its preferences.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, what it doesn't want.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, me being the chief editor of this magazine, we did in May an issue with the theme, the female expression of non-duality. And I wanted to do that for a long time, me being a female.
Right.
And, you know, the world of non-duality or, yeah, spiritual non-duality is full with male teachers. And so was my magazine, full. Sometimes to my embarrassment, you know, there wasn't one female. I always had to make an effort to get the females on board, at least one or two or three. And so we had this discussion. I'm just giving you a bit of the background story in between me and my male colleagues on the editor group. When I came up, I want to make an issue with the theme, the female expression. They always start to laugh like, ha, 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 you know, there's no gender here. And of course, you know, my true nature is absolutely genderless, anything less. And but I couldn't keep having the intuition there is a difference between a woman sitting there and spreading the word or a male. So I asked a question to, and I wanted to have the females now talking. You're a female, so you. I'm going to ask you the same question. I asked them, you know, it's true, there's no gender here. But at the same time, I'm having a female body. I'm expressing life, experiencing life, through a female body. And I sense there are differences. And I'm not looking for answers, definite answers, but I'm looking for your experience. How, you know, how is this for you? What is your sense of it? And so... What is your sense of it?
You know, I don't see myself as a female teacher in the sense that it's not where my understanding or my sharing is coming from. Yeah. But for sure what I can say is that probably when this sharing that, as you said, is genderless, is expressed through a female form, maybe is going to be more inclined to be less intellectual and more experiential, and probably is going to be more practical and more down to earth. And this maybe will lead to people to really see where in their everyday life actually are living this and less, you know, just the big theory about it. That's my feeling.
Yeah. You think it's easier for a woman to wake up?
I don't know. There are a lot more of spiritual female seekers than male.
Yeah.
That's a fact. I mean, if you look at retreats and things, in my retreats and seminars, there is like maybe 60, 70% female and 40, 30% men. I don't know here in this country, but around the world, I always see that there are more women than men nowadays looking for self-realization. I don't know why, you know.
Maybe it also has to do with the approach, a more mental approach than the males are attracted, I sometimes think.
I don't know. It's a mystery to me. But I can say to you that, you know, at the same time, there has been a strong repression of the female energy in the last thousands of years.
Yes.
And now I can see maybe it's balancing. And maybe something different is emerging. But say this, you know, it's not that I don't think of myself as a female teacher. I'm sure you understand what I mean.
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
But so I don't teach for women. But yeah, if I can look at the teaching, maybe is it can be like maybe embodied and practical and down to earth as much as possible and human.
You think it has to do, I'm just exploring a bit further with the way our body is built?
I don't have an answer to that. I don't know.
Like built for receptivity on a biological level?
I really don't know. But what I can, it's not that I don't want to reply.
No, I don't know.
But what I can say to you is that if there is a person suffering, maybe, and I don't want to make a generalization here because I do love all my male students and encourage them, you know, to explore, you know, like female side, male side equally, you know, so. Yeah. But, you know, if you have a person that has a problem, maybe a man would ask why he's suffering, and maybe a woman would try to help that person to get out of the suffering. Just like biologically, we would probably respond differently. I have no idea if this is coming from social background or cultural background. I have no idea. For sure, awareness is genderless.
Yes.
And
I agree totally.
And, you know, these are beautiful temples of exploration. And I'm very happy that my body is female.
So am I.
But, like, you know, I don't put that label on me of female teacher.
Yes. Well, it was a very interesting bunch of articles we got out of it, and everybody named another aspect.
I mean, my bit, I don't know if this helps in this exploration, my bit is like maybe more embodied and practical, maybe, you know, but, you know, just because it's my experience.
Some female authors, speakers, said because they were a woman, they had trouble, like a lot of criticism or even threats.
Really?
Have you experienced anything like that? Good, good.
No, maybe because I'm very bold. And I'm very lucky because my mother, grandmother, and great-grandmother were very courageous women that, you know, they all had a degree and they were all like leader in their things and very strong, you know. So they didn't pass me this idea that having a female body was being weak or less than it never even crossed my mind. So it doesn't happen in my reality. It does not mean that I don't see that women are paid less or, you know, less invited to conferences and things. But you know, I don't function through that idea. So I am just myself. And whoever want to come is welcome. Whoever want to go is welcome. And, you know. But it's not that I don't see that it's different, treated differently. But if I would say to you that I have been unlucky or it's been more hard because of it, for me, I would lie. So it's no.
Thank you. Thank you. Good. Let me look at my things as a preparation. Yeah, you also have a sangha I saw on your website.
Yes.
People living in a place together with your teachings or?
Not exactly. I mean, there is like a sangha around the world of now some hundreds of people that follow this teaching, and we meet online, you know, is a bigger sangha, of course, in Italy, and an international sangha. The place where I have more students is United States for now, because I've been there many times. And we meet, you know, we gather three times a year in an international retreat. But then I also am building up a place, a physical place, where I live in Italy, in Sicily, and with my partner that is here with me. And it's a place where we're going to start to invite people. And, you know, if people want to come, it's already happening, but it's kind of small private thing, you know. Some people come and stay for a while. I find the teaching a non-verbal teaching that can happen only through online, through daily experience, very powerful. Mm. So sometimes I had people coming, staying with us, you know, and not necessarily I speak to them, but they are in this field of consciousness, and they go through things in a very deep way. And it's powerful because it's not triggered by a conversation. And then maybe we speak and they, you know, kind of go through, you know, they unravel what has been emerging for them. So it's interesting me this. But at the moment it's happening on a small scale because it happens with students that have been with me already for a long, long time.
Right.
So
yes.
Not new people. But I started to do small gatherings there in Sicily as well, because the place is very beautiful and powerful.
No doubt, yeah.
And so it's very inducive.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, these silent, in-person transmission, let's use this word, is real. And is very powerful, but we have to be ready for it, maybe. Mm-hmm. So I would say at the beginning, our mind needs to understand things, you know, we need to open up to this gradually.
Right. From my own past and my seeker's journey, I remember massive lessons in just observing how my teacher did something in daily life, which caught my eye and I found so astounding at the time. I think of one of my last mentors, so to speak, Catherine Harding, the wife of Dr. Harding. When I went shopping with her, this took hours and hours and hours. Why? Because she literally stopped with everybody in the supermarket, outside, at the till, everywhere.
Wow.
She gave these people, you know, her full attention.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. And that was, for me to see that. And she wouldn't rush over somebody. Never.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, it was beautiful. Yeah. So, these days the world is on fire.
Oh, yeah.
And probably it's always been, it's just now that it's more known to us. And a lot of people very worried about it. There are also a lot of people suffering from it.
Yeah.
So what would you say to somebody who brings their worried heart to you?
Well, if you mean, you know, the social climate, political situation we are in is a huge challenge for those who try to find security in the world, you know, because if you try to hold on to an experience nowadays, it's kind of crumbling down. You can't hold on to lineages. They're, you know, destroyed or they are on the verge of being destroyed. Mm-hmm. You can't hold on to institutions that we usually have been holding on to for thousands of years.
Mm.
You know, like family or religion or political values or ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And this, of course, from a personal point of view, is terrible and is making us feeling very insecure.
Mm-hmm.
But from a spiritual point of view, this is incredibly good because there has never been a time as this one in which, I mean, in our known history at least, in which we cannot really hold on to anything outside, so is a huge invitation to go within and to find something that doesn't move, you know, in our being.
Yes.
And that's, I think, is the offering of Kali Yuga. You know, in India, they say that now we are in Kali Yuga. They say that time is circular and there are moments of huge clarity and there's Satya Yuga, the golden age. And then there are other ages that which truth goes more and more watered down until we arrive to these darkest moments that one we are living in. and is Kali Yuga. And in the Indian tradition, they say that this is when the souls really want to be embodied, because it's where we have the best opportunity to wake up. That's what they say. So, and I agree. And the invitation in a world that is on fire, as you said, is to find the foundation of our life, not in the experiences, neither inner experiences or external experiences, but in the silence of being.
Mm.
So that's a beautiful invitation. It's a hard one, but, you know, if we are alive now, it's because we want it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah. Is there anything you'd like to speak about that I haven't asked you?
I just want to say this, that in these difficult times and these challenging times, it's very important that we don't feel that we are just little helpless human being, that we cannot do anything, and it doesn't matter what we do, our personal effort, you know, the bigger picture is too wide for us to be influential.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to remind everybody that this is not true, mm-hmm. because the one in each and every one of us that is alive and conscious is not a person, is divine consciousness itself.
Mm-hmm.
And when, you know, when this consciousness wakes up to itself through your form, then there is a huge kind of dynamo effect, I don't know how to express it, on everything and everybody. And if we look at the life of those who have been waking up to their true being, they changed the life of many, some of them of millions or billions.
Mm.
And we are not little helpless human beings. We can redream the dream of the world. We can. We are the master dreamer of this dream that is made of our own being, our own consciousness. And when we do wake up, the world wakes up in us, and the people we meet wake up in us. And so we count, you know, every one of us is very important. And it doesn't matter if we think that our life is not important or influential on the bigger scheme, is not true.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to give this message of courage. The word courage in Latin means to have a heart.
Mm.
So to rest in our spiritual heart. And sometimes it's not easy because we feel crushed.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's the only place where we can be when we feel crushed.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, dear. Thank you. Thank you so much for this conversation. And may we all rest in this space within that welcomes everything all the time.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes.